Fleur at Kaechang. So I can't find line two, so I'm just going to talk while I set take line one out of my computer and put it into my phone, because I'm going to play a NewsBody file that I recorded last week. I haven't put up on the NewsBody site yet, but it's a recording I made about my weekend. I don't remember when I went it. When I made it. I made it on 8/16. The title of this piece is F Space Art Party Date Nights. Yeah, it's about an hour long. Oh, the music is still playing. Can you hear it? I thought, you know, because I turned it off, I wasn't going to hear it, right? No, but no, it's still playing through the computer. So let me set this voice recording to go for my phone. And I hope you enjoy it. NewsBody is a Kaechang project where users, participants, can upload audio files, you know, from their phone, from their computer, and anyone can join. Just go to kaechang.news. We're beta testing the site. We need some people to beta test it, and we're working out all the little bugs. And Tim Phillips, who's a Kaechang DJ, is like an amazing programmer, and he's setting the whole thing up, and it's going to be really fantastic. I'm kind of hooked on just, you know, uploading all kinds of conversations with myself and sometimes with other people too. So, okay, we're going to go to listen to F Space Art Party Date Nights from Margie.LA. I'm not hearing anything. Uh-oh. Oh, because I'm recording. I'm not playing it. Hey, that's what's going on. I'm recording myself. Okay, let's just keep going here. We're going to finish with that new recording, and then I think we're going to delete it. Yeah, that's right. Hopefully, yes. Good, we did not delete F Space Art Party Date Nights. Okay, Margie.LA. And I'll be back in 54 minutes.
Oh, it's Wednesday night. Well, it's not really Wednesday night. It's Thursday morning, 1 a.m. Yeah, I've been going on dates, you know. I thought, well, I just went on a couple of dates. Like, I was thinking that, you know, it might be good to try and go on dates, and meet some new guys, even though I really...
Oh, no, we're having a technical error. I'm going to have to take that recording, which is... I don't understand why it's so low. It must have been a crappy microphone I used, which is too bad because I actually like this recording. Let's see, maybe I can send it to my computer and get some more volume out of that. So I'm going to try to do that. It's a big file. Shoot. I can copy it to Dropbox. Can I do that? Yeah, it's a big file. It's probably, yeah. Can I copy it to WeChat? Can I copy it to iTunes? Can I add it to Notes? Can I copy it to Dropbox? Can I, Shisa, I think we're going to copy it to Dropbox. Will I remember my Dropbox password? Oh, you know, I just say that this is just, it was just hard today because, you know, there's a screw or a nail in my tire, and I, you know, the little tire light has been on, but I put air in it, and I'm like, gee, that's curious. Maybe I didn't put enough air. Well, the tire knows it's punctured. It's a smart car. Okay, I'm trying to copy it to Dropbox. Oh, but there's no Dropbox. Let's see, I'm in the Dropbox app. So let's see if I can... Hi, that was a really good... That recording that I made was like... It was good. It's 54-minute rant. And okay, I'm going to put it into 4th of July music for the Kaechang show that I did Yeah, let's see if it's going to do. Let's see how long it's going to take to upload it. We did at Pear Space in Echo Park. John Burrell and some other people organized a K-Chung event in summer. K-Chung, that was the last K-Chung Fest. K-Chung Fest, whatever year that was, 2016 or something. It was 2015. And I was a part of the event called 4th of July Mixed Feelings. And what did I do? I recited the song. I used to like to recite songs, You're a Grand Old Flag. And then I played the kazoo. And I danced with some flags. You know, I did a little flag. I like to do the flag dance on 4th of July, like Edie. You know, like little Edie. Let's see. I don't know if it's there. Ooh, there's Walmart. We've got Walmart on there. I edited the Walmart piece. I went to do make some recordings in upstate and Walmart. When my niece got married and had this really beautiful reception. Oh, look, it's bringing up the freaking someone I work with their Dropbox. What's my Dropbox? Okay. Except, you know, I change the password, like, every freaking time I log in. So, let's see if it's going to work. Oh, sign in. Oh, it's telling me the email's already taken. All right, I'm going to sign into my account, but I have to get my password. And, you know, there's buzzing through the headphones. I hope the buzzing's not coming out over the air. Let's see. I got to find my password. See, now it's telling me to sign in with someone I work with's name. I know that password's wrong. Let's see. Maybe I don't even have to play it now because I'm just talking to myself. But that was a really, really good little podcast I did. I don't know why the sound was so low. And, you know, I'm going to have to do it. In it, I talk about this new guy I'm dating who's very sexy. He's very, very sexy. I call him Hot Mess, though. Maybe that's so nice. But it is. It's hot. He's a hot mess. Okay, let's see. Where is Dropbox? Scheiße. I can't find it. Let's see if this just automatic password works. No, of course not, because I changed my Dropbox password. Like, okay, I'm almost about to recite the password. I think it is. Okay. I'm not doing it. Okay. If this was a touch tone phone, you would know. Okay. You know, I need an app. Okay, I can reset my password again. Fucking A. I can't reset my password every damn day. Well, you know, I don't know if we're going to listen to that audio file. Maybe I'll find another audio file in here and we can listen to. Let's see. Yeah, I went and got a full STD panel. It's been like a year. I don't have HIV, so that's pretty good. I can't find my freaking... I can't find my... I see it here. That's right there. Oh, I found it. Okay, I got it. I got it, kids. I got it. I'm just making a new podcast. I messed up. I was close on the password. I was off by 3 letters. Yeah. Do I want it to update? Yes, please. Okay, so I'm going to try and play this off of Dropbox. I got to switch out of my phone and back into the computer. We can see if that works so I can patch the floor and stop talking because I brought my knee pads and I've got the concrete patch in the closet in the bathroom there that the landlord let us subtract that from the rent because I said that I would fix the floor. Like, you didn't need to fix the floor. So let's see. F space, art party, date nights. Let's see if it's going to play and if it's loud enough. And if not, I'm going to have to redo the whole thing. It's opening in, well, there's a little picture of like a disco man and a disco ball.
Oh, it's Wednesday night. Well, it's not really Wednesday night. It's Thursday morning, 1 a.m.
Can you hear it?
Yeah, I've been going on dates, you know.
I can't hear this shit,
well,
dude.
I just went on a couple of dates.
What the fuck? What did I do with the file? It's like when you go to Kaechang and you know, you'd record a big show that you love and it's your greatest show and it's the best show you've ever made.
Dates.
And there's no volume on it. What if we can export it to iTunes? Let's see if I can download. Okay. Are you going to try? I don't know how it could come out so low. I must not have been using the Apple earbuds when I recorded this piece. So where did it go? Now I have to look for it in downloads. Maybe it went to the desktop. I don't know where stuff... It downloads on this computer on...
it's Wednesday night. Well, it's not really Wednesday night. It's...
I mean, I listened to this shit yesterday in my studio. And why can't I hear it now? Okay, so we're going to try something else. I got to find this file and shut it down.
You know,
let's see. Where's my volume? Where's the volume on the... yikes. Come on, dude. We're at full volume. It's not even playing. Okay, here's something that's a little creepy. Oh, I was talking to John Knuth about the...
You know,
Trump video I made
that
it's not so popular. And I'm having a hard time getting it. It's like an anti-Trump video. I'm having a hard time getting it screened. It's not very sexy. Not so much happens in it. Anyway. You know, the actor is not attractive. It's not meant to be attractive. It's supposed to be fucking Trump. So we're talking about the actor. He likes to use his penis pump. And I don't really, you know, like wanted to. I did not want to put a penis pump in my movie. Yeah, I thought I was, I guess I was talking to John about it, and I think some people, he hadn't seen the penis pump in action, or someone hadn't seen a penis pump. I said, I can send you a video of it. I thought, okay, I could do it to this song.
Thank you.
playing?
Thursday morning. 1
Can you hear it?
Yeah, I've been going on dates.
Line?
I thought, well, I just went on a couple of dates. Like, I was thinking that, you know, it might be good to try and go on dates.
I'm
going to
listen.
Some new guys.
I got to walk out of the room and listen on the phone to hear.
Even though I really just want to make money, but, you know, I get lonely sometimes. Or I thought that maybe I've been a little, you know, depressed because of my suit and all of that. Or, like, I'm in the process of mourning, even though, of course, that's been 3+ years. But, you know, it's only been since March since I knew he was dead. So I'm actually in this mourning phase. But maybe I should try and get out of it and not be so morbid or something. So I signed back up for dating sites. Yeah, but
yeah,
I went on
really
dates.
Ooh, those are the buzzing headphones.
On Sunday? No, on Monday and on tonight on Wednesday. But before I went on dates,
hello.
I went to Art Stuff.
Can I hear myself?
So I went to Art Stuff on
Saturday.
I slept late.
It's not loud enough.
Slept in. I've been working on this, trying to finish this sculpture in the studio.
Like,
it's
the
stuffed
so
sculpture
here.
That got kind of complicated. It's got a lot of twists
okay,
and turns
like
and
one.
Details. And it's this hanging
yeah.
piece. It's a some kind of organic.
I said organic. Okay, hold on.
Probably.
All right. So we're gonna get rid of that, and we're gonna look for another file. Let's see. Here in the Dropbox, how many files do I have in there? I've got some other files on my phone from Newsbody, but I like to. Let's see if I have another one I could play. That I've already listened to, that's not all, like, fucked up. So let me see. Go back to voice memos. Let's see how the volume is on this one. Moon. Why won't it let me? Yeah. Dr. Block, Monument to Masoud. That one is that was from August 10th. That one's 34 minutes. So let me try and see if we can get some volume on that one. So I'm going to go out of the computer into the phone. And, yeah, I was probably using better microphone. Let's see. You know, maybe I should just plug in. I only have a USB mic. I don't have – let's see. Okay, so let me try this one. We're going to try playing this one.
Yeah, it's Friday. Friday at 12:39 a.m. 8:10:18. There's Juki barking. It's, you know, it's really, really fucking hot. And it's like hot at night. Very strange walking outside. It reminds me of New York in the summer, but without as much humidity this late. But there's like a wind that's blowing that's a warm wind. So Juki and I were walking, you know, out before it, and a freight train was passing by. And I like the train. I like to see the lights of the train. I like to hear the sound. It moves slow. And, you know, on that Nextdoor app, you know, which is an app and an online site where neighbors write about things. People complain about the trains blowing their whistle, you know, at night. But I think they do that when they cross streets or something. I don't know why they do that. But it was funny because I remember living in Silver Lake hearing, like, the sound of distant train whistles like that. And I figured it was, like, in Glendale, or I don't know, you know, sound bounces around. I didn't know where the freight trains go, but actually I don't think the freight trains go to Glendale. I think they're all here in downtown L.A. and going east. So here the whistle they blow is much closer. But, you know, I find it kind of romantic somehow, this history, this old history of trains and trains moving. And, you know, where I grew up, my mom's house is on the Hudson River, and there's a train tracks right next to the river, and there are freight trains that come by, but they're much louder than here. And I think as I go much faster, I think, I could be wrong, but I just remember them being super loud. And here, I'm not, I mean, the train tracks are across the street. And I was joking with my friend Spencer Douglas about, he said something about me being on the other side of the tracks, or I forget, he used to live here in El Sereno. But I said, no, I'm on the other side of the tracks. I think I'm on the, you know, the other side of the tracks are over there, away from me. Anyway, laughing. That's City Terrace, not El Sereno. So, but when I was a kid, I remember these freight trains, I think, going faster and being much louder. And they weren't, the distance was, you know, it was closer, but, like, not that much closer, except there was nothing between. There were no buildings in between. But I had this fear of, like, trains running over me and stuff. I would have these nightmares of trains running over me and going, climbing up the hill to my mom's house and running over me. And maybe that's just a Freudian thing. And also of the, like, the neighbor who had a plate in his head from World War II, and I thought he looked kind of like a skeleton or something. It was like, that was Vince Dudar, and he used to put on his pajamas in the afternoon, like 4 o'clock, and sit in the back porch. But actually, it was Vince and Helen Dudar and the old mom who lived there, the old Ukrainian people who spoke Polish. So they're Polish Ukrainian. They belong to the Polish church. But it was actually their money that built my studio, because they left some money to my mom and their house to my mom. And so my mom shared that money with her kids, and I used that money to build out this studio here. And now all that money is gone, so I'm on my own to try and figure out how to, like, maintain running the studio, because it's expensive, you know. Not that it's actually cheap for L.A., but it's still expensive for me until I sell more work. And my goal is to just sell work, or to get grants, or to keep going and to try and raise more money, because although I have this job, which is a good job that I have, it just doesn't pay enough money to support, you know, my studio and everything else that I do. So... But, you know, that's what happens when you had gone into doing some kind of film work, or like being a union person or something like that, I probably could afford to live wherever I wanted to live, but I probably wouldn't have a time to make art. So, because I'd always be working on the jobs, you know, because when you work in the film industry, you have to just constantly work on those jobs. So, but that's not what I was going to talk about. First, we're going to pick up from the last time, which was about, you know, I went through all the medical thing. I'll get my test this week to see what my HDL, LDL, whatever this cholesterol thing is, and everything else. But I wanted to talk about being on the Dr. Susan Block show with the Dominatrixes against Donald. And I had no idea what the show was. I thought it was going to be a big party. It wasn't a big party, but everyone there was really nice. And there was, like, party things. Like, there was, like, hummus, and there was some cheese. One of the dominatrixes brought some nice brie. And there were, like, chips and salsa, and there was wine, and there was a full bar for, you know, whoever wanted drinks. And Dr. Susan Block has this compound out there in Inglewood, and Dr. Susan Block is, a sex expert, and I actually haven't paid much attention to what she does, even though I think that I went to her studio in downtown L.A., maybe when I first came here to move in L.A. proper in the late 90s. I don't know if I applied for a job or when to look at something. I believe the studio is on Olive Street. Olive between, like, Olympic and something. I may be off by a few blocks. But now they have this place out in Inglewood, and I went with the Dominatrixes against Donald to be on the show. But I dressed up as the bee, and Dr. Susan Block wanted to know who I was. Like, I said, I'm an angry bee, because we're, like, fighting Trump. But I thought it was going to be a party, and I was just going to jump in the end and just, like, kick butt. I was wearing my thigh-high boots and, You know, I'm used to, like, with the art kids, they're just, like, you know, be crazy, you know, whatever. They're, like, just have me show up and I could be crazy and do my thing. And this was actually, it was not so much fun. But the part that was fun was this, is there was a submissive guy dressed up as Donald Trump, and one of the dominatrixes fucked him in the ass with a strap on. That was pretty good, and I was right there. I got to spank his little butt. There were a few Donald Trump guys wearing masks with a little, I brought a riding crop, you know. But I seemed to confuse the host as to what my role was. And then there were these women who were kind of large women with big breasts who rubbed them up against, they rubbed their breasts up against each other. And then they were peeing on Trump. And I could have peed on Trump too, but I felt like, well, you know, I actually... One, even when I was working as a dominatrix, I found the pee thing difficult. I did it. You know, I did it when you're in a room privately with someone. I still found it hard to do that, but I could do it. But also, I was being paid to do it. Here, there are a lot of people watching, and, you know, I said that I wasn't going to do it. And actually, there were people who said they were going to get up there and they were going to pee, and they didn't do it. I might have been able to pee on him, but I just didn't really... think it was gonna work. And then, of course, after all the peeing thing was over, I went into the bathroom and peed like a quart of pee. But I never agreed to be a peeing person. I was there as support, and I also held microphones, and, you know, I did a little spanking, and I said some crazy things, and I told you know, one of the camera guys, like, after the peeing, I was like, look, the mic cable has pee on it, so you might want to clean off your mic cables, because the women were peeing, and it got on the mic cable. And, you know, the thing that was kind of cool about it, though, is they've got this, like, compound. It's an office building with, like, a courtyard, and different people who work on the show, you know, I think stay in different parts of the building, and I think that they rent the whole building out. Yeah, and it reminded me of the day before I'd been to a similar building to go get my tests for my from the Quest lab for my blood test for the doctor, which I had just talked about. But I thought it was funny because it was a week of doctors. It was a Dr. Wool, and then I believe I probably went to Dr. Paul that week, who's my psychotherapist. Yes, I did. I went to Dr. Paul. I went to Dr. Wool. Which is, there's a song, is it a song by Steely Dan called Dr. Wu? What is that? I have to look that up, but it just made me think of, like, Dr. Wool, Dr. Wu. Why would I ever mention Steely Dan in my life about anything? But it's something from my childhood, and I don't know what that song is. And then this was a similar compound in Inglewood, similar to the compound in... I guess Westlake, where I went and gave my test. Oh, also what was funny, is I was wearing my sexy bee outfit, and I was sort of stuck on this set, and it's a really small set, so, like, everybody's, like, unless you're right in the middle of it, you're not on camera unless they cut, but they also, it's a two-camera shoot, but the set is actually too small to really... include lots of people unless they move their cameras around. Yes, it's a little bit frustrating. I was thinking about when we were doing K-Chunk TV at the Hammer and how it didn't seem that big, but actually you had a lot more. Whoops, I just bumped my elbow against the wall. How, you know, this set there was pretty cramped and pretty limiting and pretty small. And I just imagined it to be some, like, party, wild party. It's not like it wasn't, it actually wasn't fun, but it was weird. It was pretty weird. And then what the thing that was, like, you know, the dominators against Donald were great. You know, Tara was great. She was dressed in, like, this, you know, business attire and, you know, yelling at Trump for all the bad things he's done. And, you know, they were talking about the Russians and Putin and, you know, all kinds of crap. And then there was a woman playing Melania, and she seemed a little bit shy, and they all had some cards talking about, like, that were inserted with their dominatrix names and websites, and nobody actually asked me how I wanted to participate, because I would have given them my porn name. You know, we could have use my Instagram or my website or something, but I don't think it was ever considered that I was going to be on the show or something, which is kind of crazy because I am actually kind of have a reputation, you know, maybe not in that dominatrix world, but I have a reputation in other worlds. Oh, and there was this guy from Vice magazine writing about it, and I just feel like that was like reliving the porno past, but it was not as fun. But it was kind of like the same, maybe later. I don't know. It reminded me, what was I thinking about? I was thinking about how I think I have a sentimental attachment to these kinds of worlds. Like, it was kind of like being on the Robin Bird show or something, which I never was on. But I was on this cable show in New York when I was 20 or 19. I think I was 20. Yeah, it was, I think it was Midnight Blue. Was that Al Goldstein's show? What was it? I think I'm trying to remember what it was with Annie Sprinkle and Spiderweb. And, you know, so it's funny because it's I feel like I'm, like, like sentimentally attached to things that, you know, maybe I just need to let go of somehow. But also there aren't so many freaks left anymore. And this guy Max, who did the Susan Block show, I don't know if that's her partner just on the show or in life or what it is, but he told me he published Annie Sprinkle's first book, and he was arrested for it. And he's been arrested 23 times, I think, if I have that number correctly. Because, you know, back in the day, these old-timers, they're all like free speech, you know, free speech people, and they were arrested for, you know, making pornography. And today, you know, I think it would be hard for people to even understand, especially young people. You can watch like PornoTube, and there's all kinds of explicit stuff just there, and I think anyone can watch it, right? And it's free, and you know, but you know, 30 years ago. Actually, it was probably 40 years ago, 50 years ago. Yeah. Just, it was not like that. People were arrested. People were arrested for making sex movies. And it's not like sex movies that, like, kids would see. It was, like, totally for adults only, you know. And it was, it's not like the internet now where anyone can see anything, no matter how old you are. You know, this was stuff that was, you know, protected and for adults only, but people were still arrested. You know, things change. So I went and I did that. Oh, but the thing that was funny was that, so what might be costume, but then I changed out of, I changed back into my, like, donut pants and my, what shirt was I wearing? Oh, my female pleasure shirt. And it's very, I noticed that in the front of the place there was a bar, like, it looked like a dive bar a couple doors down, and I was laughing, and there were two young guys, like, one guy was looking for his friend who was at the, you know, part of the Susan Block show, and you're in the compound, and if you stayed in that compound, and then this young friend, like, hey, you know, I was like, oh, is that bar still open? He's like, yeah, let's go, you want to hang out? And I was like, oh, they were so cute, they were, like, in their 20s or 30s or something, and they wanted to hang out with me, and I thought that was so nice, and I said, you know, well, you know, I would, but, you know, I live in East L.A., and the, you know, I have a driver here who's going to take me home, so I really, you know, I can't afford to, like, hang out, like, take a Lyft back to, or an Uber or whatever back to East L.A. I just, you know, it's too much money, so when I have a driver here, I've got to go, but thank you so much for the invitation, you know, and I thought, like, oh, boy, these cute young boys. Also, Armin had messaged me that night. I haven't heard from Armin in a while. It was his birthday. I remember I asked him, okay, the last time he was here, I think it was the last time he was here. I really wanted to tell him about Masood. I felt like I should tell Armin something personal about me besides whatever I may or may not have said after sex, which is just like crazy stuff. But I feel like it might be time to tell him something real, since I found out that Masood died. And anyway, I should just tell him, like, maybe why I'd been so crazy, like, weird, like, sometime, like texting him things. One time I texted him things like, you know, what did I deleted it because I was upset about the text that I wrote. I was just like, you know, you, this isn't coming, like, nothing is coming from this, and you know, you come here stoned out of your mind, and, you know, I don't know what any of this means, or I don't know what I wrote. It's like, you know, the thing is, like, when you sleep with someone for, like, more than once or twice or whatever, I mean, for me, at least, I expect some kind of build up in, you know, intimacy or at least proficiency, you know? So sleeping with someone where it's so up and down, where it could be really great one time and the next time it's not, and then, you know, another time there's a drug deal going on outside, another time he's on coke, another time he's stoned, another time he's not stoned, you know, another time he's weird because he probably had some STD or paranoid about, you know, just like, it just gets so weird, like, about, like, I just don't understand that. But then again, I've never actually, there was never any progression on my part to either, and I'm pretty cold, I think. Not in the sex part, but I think in the relating. I mean, we never really talked very much, about anything. One time when he'd come here in the day, when he'd quit his job, and I think he was trying to be closer with me, and he talked about going on a date somewhere or something, and I was like, ha, 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 you know, whatever. I was like, yeah, that sounds great. But then I was actually really bored, and I wish he would just leave because I wanted to go to work. I don't know why he'd ask me on a date. Like, I feel like he's too young to ask me on a date. He didn't really mean it, or maybe he was confused, or maybe I should just be more forward. And, you know, I think the thing is I was just so caught up with Masood, you know, in my head, because I was always waiting for him to come back. So how could I really be involved with anyone else when I was waiting for Masood to come back? And I found this... In the voice memos, I found this message from last September, which is before I knew Masood was dead, and it was like, it was kind of a pathetic message, so I'll just leave it there, and I'll just replay it. I should say replay it. I'm not going to replay it, because I think parts of it were too desperate for me to want to hear right now. So, I will just talk about what the message, the voice memo was, which was like, why, if Masood loves me, why doesn't he come back? Armin does not love me, but he keeps coming back. That's me simplifying it. So now I understand, of course, it's love versus need. Well, this is, it's love versus need. Armin is need. Masood was love. However, Masood didn't come back because he was dead. And he actually died trying to come back to me on the very same day I had last seen him. But then he died. And no one told me he was dead until March of this year, which was almost 3 years later. So, I am obsessed with this. Obviously, how do people mourn? How does one mourn? Not going to talk about Joan Didion again, because I talked about that before. Except that I will say that in Joan Didion, in her Blue Nights piece, it's very, very repetitive. And that's actually what happens when you're mourning, right? Or at least for me, it's very repetitive. I say the same phrase over and over is, no one ever told me you were dead. No one ever told me you were dead. No one ever told me you were dead. So, you know, nostalgic. Joan Didion has been called nostalgic in her writing. So, nostalgic, am I nostalgic? Dr. Susan Block show, like Robin Bird show, which I was never on in New York, but being on these sex shows with the sex workers reminds me of New York. Equally as freakish, equally as crazy, in its weirdness. Like the guy who was wearing the Trump mask, who got fucked in the ass. He also, I've met him before, and he's he always talks to me about his different girlfriends and stuff, and I don't want to be like reveal too much about this guy, but he's got like just a kind of simple blue collar job, and he's learning balloon art and making balloons, and he dresses as a clown, and I'm like, clowns scare me. And then he showed me a picture of his clown face and his clown wig, and he's actually not a scary clown. He's some other kind of clown. I could say he's not scary because he doesn't have the classic clown look. I wish that he had shown me a picture of him as a classic clown look, but he did not. But he had he had like a page boy haircut or something. And he makes balloon art. And he's looking for new opportunities in different countries with his balloon art. And he also prepared for getting pegged by fasting or something for days. And I was like, oh, I didn't know you had to fast. I will think you just take an enema. He said, no, he did some kind of fasting. I don't know if that meant no food for 3 days. You know, I'm not like in the S&M scene anymore. When I was in the S&M scene, it was to get paid, but I don't think that I ever did anything like fasting for 3 days to get fucked in the butt, you know? Or, yeah, what do they call now? Pegging. Is it called that? I think SS is called that when it's a strap-on, right? It's not like, I guess, when a, you know, you're getting, like, a proper dick in your butt. Because when I see, like, when I'm on those dating, I've gone back to the dating sites again, and when I see that somebody, a guy wants to be pegged, I swipe, is it left or right? I think it's left, means away. I swipe left. I swipe left. Yeah, which reminds me of my poem, Single Again, I'm back on the apps, but not so seriously this time until, I knocked over a bottle of water. That, okay, so we're going to go back because I can't remember the whole poem. I'm going to recite it for it to do a spoken word piece when we do our K-Chung Fest here. You hear the crickets? That's what the crickets. But I have it. I wrote this for Molly's Gong Show. Single again, I'm back on the apps, but not so seriously this time until maybe I want to get serious again. Or not. LOL. WTF. BTW. ISO. Fuck buddies. Millennials. But please, no HPV. STD. No glove. No love. Swipe left. Swipe right. So many options. So many men. So it all time. Hit it. Dance, dance, dance. See, after the hit it, that was from 2016. After the hit it, that's when I danced to So Many Men, So Little Time, the song from the 70s. Should, when I recite the poem, dance, 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 that's like just a description of dancing. I said it now, but there's that, I think it's a Haruki Murakami book, Dance, 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 or is it a story or something? Is that right? I've got that in my head. I've related it to Haruki Murakami. I may have it kind of wrong, but it's something about dancing and Haruki Murakami. And it's really hot. I just took a sip of a cold beverage. Juki and I might sleep in the trailer. I talked about the Dr. Susan Block show. I was going to talk about something else. Oh, I was going to talk about this monument to Masood, the ceramic piece I made, and wondering if on Instagram I should, with the pieces, write like some exposition about the piece. You know, do I want to pour my guts out? Do I not want to pour my guts out about pieces? Do I want to talk about any pieces like about this monument to Masood, this text piece I made, and then I sort of obliterated the text? You know, it's funny because, like, I concealed the text with the glaze. When I made the piece, when it was in greenware and I took a picture and put it on Instagram, you could see the text. And then I chose to glaze it in a way where you couldn't see the text. So the text is like, there's the energy of putting the text on the piece, but then you cannot read the text later. And I was thinking, like, well, should I make other text pieces where you can actually read the text, where there's actually stories on the text, or should I just, you know, is it the act of writing the text that's important, or does it, is it important to actually read the text later for the viewer to be able to read the text, or is it the energy of just the act of making the text. So what happened after that piece is then I started doing these drawings, ink drawings, where instead of actually writing the text, I was having conversations and trying to record the energy of the conversation so there's no text at all. And I was having the, but there was just like messy scratches and marks, and it was marks. And it was, they felt kind of free. It also felt kind of violent. It felt like energy. It felt like crazy energy. Was it violent? I don't know. Was it sadness? Because I was having conversations with Masood. I was having all kinds of conversations like this. And, you know, it was about a kind of sadness and a kind of mourning, but a kind of free, being free of having to use the language that only people, you know, privileging English over other languages doesn't seem fair. But, however, if I were to write in other languages, would that seem real? My, like, I live in a neighborhood where Spanish is spoken, but I'm not a native Spanish speaker. So why would I want to appropriate somebody else's language? The other thing is German. I'm of German descent. I can speak a little bit of German, kind of poorly, but because I don't spend enough time there to have to in Germany to have to speak the language. But that would also feel like cheating. You know, I'm an American. I live here. English is my primary language. That's what I speak. But I want to communicate with people, and I feel like maybe some of the best ways to communicate with people in art is by a kind of abstraction or something that is like an energy exchange. So can I make these pieces that feel like an energy exchange and feel like dialogue without having to use a language? Is that possible? You know, is it in looking at something that's, you know, abstract and not, you know, figurative, not narrative. Can you tell a narrative without having to be able to identify the narrative in that piece, but to just feel the energy of the narrative? And then, you know, I was thinking about, like, Meera Shandall, this Tangled Alphabet show. I saw that she was at MoMA. And there was a male artist, but I forget his name. I don't know. But it was. But I remember her work because I think of her work often. And I just think of all of these women and this work by women that I was never exposed to in art school when I was in the sculpture school, you know. And you know, when I was in the film school at CalArts, it was different because I was studying film. So an experimental film with just a few classes in the art school that I took, but my primary focus was film and video. But I'm talking about, like, now that I'm making objects again, I'm talking about this study of objects and of sculpture and of art and what I was exposed to and how much great work there was by women that I never, ever, ever was shown because my teachers didn't know it or they didn't choose to show it to us. They just didn't know it. So, you know, that's a part of what I'm working on now in thinking about that and what I make my work and relating it to something and someone I know. And a lot of times it's new things. I mean, also I was thinking about when I was in sculpture school, like, you know, maybe I'm going to have to get together and talk to some of the women I went to school with, I'm still in touch with, mostly on Facebook, and not so many of them, actually. But, like, Louise Bourgeois, like, why don't we talk about Louise Bourgeois? My teacher, Jim Leedy, he said something to me about Linda Benglis, but nobody, like, he's like, oh, your work is like Linda Benglis, I guess because I made something with, like, a dildo on it, or, you know, but it was never like, okay, here's her work, she's amazing, you should get to know her, you should get to know this work, you should do this work, like, there wasn't any of that encouragement, and I keep going back to it because it's a constant fight. You know, it was a constant fight. It was a constant psychological fight. It's a constant battle. It only fucked me up. You know, maybe it made me stronger, but how strong do you have to be? You know? How do we make it work? If I had a lot of money right now and I didn't have to go to my day job so much, I might travel around the country and go to visit those women that I did my undergrad with and say, the ones who were still working, who were still making art, and say, what was it like for you? And maybe even the ones who aren't making art, and say, what was it like for you? But mostly I'm interested in the ones who were still making art. Actually, I think it would have to be not just the women, because there were a lot of people in that department who I think stopped making art, male or female, you know. didn't matter. Maybe it's not gender-based. But so I would like to find, you know, the people and say, what are you doing now? What's important to you? Are you making this? Are you not making this? Why did you stop making art, or why do you continue to make art? Or how do you take this risk? Did you give up the risk? Was it too hard? So, you know, I'm still here. I'm still making my shit. I'm still making my work. Every day, I work on it. In some way, every day, I work my day job. Today, I didn't go to the gym. So, okay, so tomorrow, you know, maybe I'll wake up 1 pound heavier. Or maybe I'll wake up 1 pound lighter because I didn't eat proper dinner. But, you know, the thing is, you know, it becomes a choice. That's what it is. Do I work on the sculpture, which is difficult? I'm trying to finish up this sewn sculpture. Or do I go to the gym? Going to the gym, I love going to the gym now because I've gotten used to it. But if I go to the gym, then I don't work on the sculpture. You know, or do I go to the gym and then work on the sculpture later? Or how structured do I have to be when I already have been to work and went to see a friend in the hospital, and then did some food shopping, and that's, I went to the Trader Joe's where the shooting, you know, had been, and, you know, that's, you know, everyone, it was very, very quiet. It seemed kind of quiet there to me, like not as crowded as it, you know, it normally would be, but not everybody knows it's open yet, and I'm trying to be respectful and not talk about the issue and, you know, perhaps bring up any PTSD for the people working there, you know. So I got my food, you know, just try and make a little chit-chat, and then, you know, I went on my way. And, you know, these are tough times we live in. So I just want to make my sculptures. Oh, shoot, I forgot I did laundry. Now I got to hang it out on the line, and it's 1:13 a.m. I got to hang out my laundry. But it's so hot, it'll probably be dry by morning. So I can wake up and put on some clean clothes and go to work. Okay, good night, everybody. Juki and I are going to go hang laundry now.
Hey, I'm back. Peace. In the studio. That was my rant from August 10th at 1:13 in the morning. I'm plugging the laptop back in. I was trying to figure out why line two, why it's disappeared. Maybe there was a problem with it. So, yeah, I didn't patch the floor because there wasn't enough time. I'll have to change into my outfit and then clean the floor a little bit and then patch it and then use some water. And I kind of want to get out of here. So, yeah, but this is good that I played this little piece because I listened to some of it while I was reading some things online about the female gaze. Because I'm working on a grant application. The female gaze is a feminist film theoretical term representing the gaze of the female viewer. Anyway, hi, my gaze behind the camera. I think it's really that of a gay man a lot of times. I don't know if it's a female gaze like as a director. I'm a female and I'm a director, but I really feel more like a gay man when I'm looking at, you know, hot guys on the camera, on the screen, in front of the camera. But I'm just the female. That's my female gaze. Anyway, it's too hot. I don't want to think about this. It was. It came from. It's a response to the feminist film theorist Laura Mulvey's term, the male gaze, which was in her article, Visual Pleasure and Narrative Cinema. Well, I have that. I have that in a book. And I should probably read that before I work on my grant proposal. I may or may not. You know, I just got to, like, buckle down and do this application. There's a lot of support behind me in L.A. amongst artists and institutions, friends. So, you know, I just got to do all the applications. And one day I'm going to get the money. And, you know, I'm going to pay off the credit card bills and have some money to live and make some new work. That maybe, well, you know, I can make work without money if I make, like, movies or something like that, or just a little money if I just pay the performers or something that I could do. But maybe I could get, like, a camera person, or maybe I could hire someone to scan the hundreds of drawings. Like, I have, like, 6 sketchbooks from this year. I think each has 24 pages, and I have drawings on both sides and writing, and I need to get it scanned. And a few years ago, Kate Gilbert helped me with that. She did that But now I've run out of money and I can't afford to pay anyone to do that yet, but maybe next year. So thanks, everyone, for listening. And it's Margie.LA. And I'm going home now to work on my grant proposal and to work on my sculpture. And I'm going to listen to the end of that show because I was talking about something I cared about. So let's see. I love you.